The theme of our message series has been, as we've gone through Ephesians, has been beyond your wildest dreams, and that is certainly appropriate for today, because this is wildly beyond our dreams. And let me just kind of go down the list for starters and let you know who these folks are. And many of them you are very familiar with because our relationships are very personal. And so first we have Fyodor Lupanchuk. He's from Chișinău, Moldova. Every one of you knows where Chișinău, Moldova is in Eastern Europe. That's where he lives and grew up and was born, I guess, right? Ovidio Garcia is from the Western Highlands of Guatemala. It's a little town called Comitancio. And he grew up there and now runs a ministry that we've partnered with down there, and we'll get into a lot of details on that. John Cruz. John and Diane Cruz head up a ministry that is called Hope for Burundi, and they used to have quite a large span to their ministry, but it has narrowed down to basically one person, one place. The key national working there is Peace and Hornberry. So we have a woman key partner, and John and Diane are the stateside partner to her, and then we are partners to them. Dan Shoemaker is the president of RMI, Reciprocal Ministries International, in Haiti. That's just our longest partner, almost 30 years now that we have been partnered with Dan in RMI. He's the president now. He was Dan, the missionary man down in Haiti for many years. He looks American. He is not. He is Haitian through and through, raised there. And then Eric Wowo from Liberia. And he's from Monrovia, Liberia, or that's, I don't know where you were originally from, a little different place, but that's where you're based now. And he is the founder and executive director of Change Agent Network, which is you're going to hear more about as well. So these five people represent the five focus areas where we have invested all our time, energy, money, your experience. Many of you, there's two real joys that I would have. One would be to have all five here. This is amazing. The other one would be for all of you to go with these five people to the places where they can help you engage and see the world in a whole different way. But without that possibility, although let's see, how many of you have gone on a mission trip somewhere? Now, no, look, don't do this. I need a hand way up and leave it up because folks need to see this is a heavily engaged church. And if, you know, as our panel would look at that, they might see folks that haven't raised their hands yet and wonder, okay, what's going on here? Let's get this going. So make a plan today. Line up your next trip. All right, let me get started. I want to just, you know, we don't have a lot of time and we have each one of these could take hours or weeks, but let me just kind of start out. Fyodor Lupanchuk and I met in about 06, I think, and it was accidentally. We were supposed to go on a mission trip to Israel. It got canceled because there was a little war going on at the time, so we punted. Kind of feel bad about that now, but you know. But God arranged for us to find another location, and that was in somewhere in Eastern Europe that no one had ever heard of. And so off we went, and we did a medical clinic there with a dozen or so people. But part of that was a chance for me to go up and join a team that was training Moldovan church planters. Now, it's pretty interesting that I would be coming in as the expert to train Moldovan church planters on how to plant churches in Moldova. But I faked it, and they bought it. And the upshot of it was I met Fyodor, who is the director over that program. And as I saw his success in planting, training, organizing church planters, my question to him was, if you're doing so much as a national, what is the role of us as a church, as North Americans? What is, you know, as the game has changed in missions, how do we engage and are involved? And I relayed that story to him the other day, and he said, "What did I say?" And I said, "I don't know, but it was a great question now, wasn't it?" But actually, that question has followed this church and caused us to seek deeply of how do we do this? How do we do it well? And these five people have really taught us how to do that. So Fyodor, I've taken all your time, so I'm going to go on to a video.
I'm the first one I can take my time.
Fyodor, not only have you overseen the planting of churches in Moldova, but there was this strange jump to where you began mentoring a group planting churches in Central Asia. And so tell us, how do you do that? How does that work?
In 5 minutes?
Yeah, four. I took
4 minutes. Well, first of all, thank you. It's a great privilege to be back at Trinity Bible Church. It's a friendly, and the church looks for friendship and partnership. That's a great privilege and a great folk. Planting churches is kind of, we often tend to rely on people. And it is not, because Jesus said, I am going to build my ecclesia, my gathering, my church, my kingdom, and the gates of the hell will not prevail it. And many times we actually take the credits that we can do a good job or bad job. And it's supposed to be relayed to us. We're supposed to be some of the instruments, but actually God is above all the power to use and to do what He intended to do in this world. And honestly, planting the church, it's one of the, not one of the, it's the most difficult and sometimes most boring job you can do. That is not a by human, but it's by God-led, Spirit-led job you can do. And if you are not called for this, you will not survive it. It's not really... Today it's kind of we cook ministers and missionaries in the classroom. Mm-hmm. You know, we cook.
You get it?
And that is not the case, because really to be in a church plant, it's a call. And it's a very difficult job. It's not because I am doing church plant. It's just a difficult job, you know. Well, God still has some people to do this, and He called them apostles. And He did not call me to go somewhere to plant churches. Because when He said, I'm going to plant, He didn't say, I'm going to use Moldovans, Americans, someone to plant churches. I'm going. But who He can use it? We might have some experience, but we actually can be just the one who can lay a little bit of the foundation or the stone and rely on them as Paul did. And that's the ministry we call. And us, in the experience of Moldova, when we started the church plant ministry, we wanted to create a movement. Mm-hmm. The movement which will take over and will go on. We look for the books and materials to teach us how we do this. We look and read different materials. Was it probably great materials? I don't remember it. But I didn't help much on us. And we kind of created in Moldova. God kind of allowed us to create some strategy, kind of vision-focused material to how we can plant a national-focused movement church planting ministry. And one of the great result of it, kind of success we call it in a human sense, actually what you discovered when you came and wrote a dissertation, doctoral dissertation, and you discovered that actually the great thing which brought a lot of success is the mentoring program. Not necessarily a strategy, but a mentoring program, which is very different than just the strategy how you do. It's hard to explain in a short time. But later on, when God called us to go beyond Moldova, when we went to Central Asia, we actually applied this mentoring program to them, and we led them to create the strategy. And at the end of the time, we discovered again that this is really a biblical-based mentality, not a strategy, mentality of planting and multiplying churches that let Jesus do what He said He is going to do. And actually, thank you for the, I already told the team, and I'm saying again that thank you for the dissertation. And he came for probably 10 days. Mm-hmm. And you met a lot of church planters in the country. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to discover what was really good and why he's so successful. And that's at the time when we discovered that the mentor program actually worked very well for the entire system or mentoring program for the movement, church planting movement in the country. Thank you.
Well, it's been enormously successful. After planting 85 churches in Moldova and then using this strategy, this mentality, mm-hmm. to mentor mentors in the next mm-hmm. In the next area, yes, it's just amazing. My mind is just blown by the fact that so many hundreds of churches are being planted. And he talks about, oh, well, these are just little churches, 5-6 people, mm-hmm. up to 25. Trinity Bible started exactly the same way, exactly mm-hmm. the same way. And so God is going to continue to grow and use those churches, multiply mm-hmm. them into the lives of others. Thank you, Theodore. Ovidio, I met Ovidio back in 2001. We were taking a trip to Guatemala as sort of a test trip. We became instant friends, just as I have with every one of the people up here. These are my best friends. Now, some of you are too, so don't get jealous. But I have loved these guys, and they have loved me in return. But Ovidio, the ministry that you have in Guatemala comes a whole lot out of your own history and background, experience, and what God took you through, which was very difficult in your own childhood. And yet, it has now taken shape and focus in serving the widows and orphans in Guatemala. Most of these widows, not because their husband died, but they lost them to alcoholism, or they may have died, or may have left, and it has left the country and your community devastated. And so how does this program bring help and hope to the people in your community? A microphone. Number two.
Thank you. Morning. It's a pleasure to be back here to Trinity. We consider Trinity as part of it's like our home church. So it feels to be back home. It's nice to be back home. I want to thank Pastor Tim for inviting us and just to be part of the service today. Just want to go short and want to use the shortest version if I could, but I want to add something very special to what we do in Guatemala. We started with the Bible Institute knowing that we could train pastors and leaders in the community, especially that many people did not have the opportunity to go to school. Mm-hmm. But at that time they were already preaching, and so we started teaching secular education at that Bible Institute, and now we have basic Bible education all the way up to bachelor level, and we also train pastors in music and in Bible. So Bible, secular education, and music, which has been a big difference in the community, mm-hmm. Where about 500,000 people live in the whole section of the Mayan, of that Mayan section of town, the highlands of the state of San Marcos. Over 13 years that Trinity has been involved in that ministry, we've trained over 1,000 pastors who are actually doing the work in that area. Mm-hmm. Following your question is that, if I see a little bit about my past, I'm one of the indigenous person that has made a difference in the community. And because of that, I got an opportunity to come all the way up to California and study for 2 years and face difficulties. When I was a child, my father was an alcoholic and my mother wasn't educated and she didn't speak Spanish. So you see that there was very less opportunity for indigenous people. And besides that, indigenous people in Guatemala are considered like second class people. And I was one of them. So by the Latin people, you're pushing to the idea of you cannot do much. You are not capable. And sometimes we take that seriously. So I saw that. But the Lord really, really guided me. And I was part of the Christian Children's Fund at that time. So I got a scholarship, and only because my education that made a big difference in my life, but not only my life, my family and the community. So seeing that, I got seeing some of the difficulties that were having the widows and orphans, mainly because many of these husbands and have died out of alcoholism, and others have gone somewhere places and things like that. So we see a lot of people, mainly ladies, and we have identified about 300 ladies living there with bad condition, only having like a one house where they cook, where they sleep, where they do everything, and there's 6 or 7, 8 members of the family. And so we started identifying this, how we could help these widows, and at the same time they have their kids, and there is no hope. A lot of these people go down the coast to pick coffee, and they make like $20-$50 for a couple of months, and that's what they use to survive in the whole month, so that they can use it for their education. And so we started thinking about how we could help them, and we started with the scholarship program. Right now we have about 115-117 children being sponsored, and Trinity is part of that. And also that's for the kids, because we believe that education will make a big difference for the children once they grow, once they educate themselves, once they graduate, so they can start seeing life in a different way. Also their mothers, since they don't have many opportunities, so we start with the animal program, providing them chickens, pigs, goat, or sheep. We train them, but at the same time, we want to see that hope, not only by providing them these animals, but also providing them spiritual hope. So whenever we get together with them to train them, to teach them different techniques to be successful in business, we have small devotions with them, so that we can share the gospel with them, so that they don't only have the spiritual but also physical hope in this case. And we believe strongly that what it says in James 1:27, visit the orphans and the widows in their affliction. And so that's exactly what we're doing. We believe that will make a big difference in their lives. And it has shown already, but it's a process. And we just want to thank Trinity because your involvement there, and we wouldn't be able to do what we do without your support and mainly prayers. So thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ovidio. John, you can share that microphone. John and Diane have had a partnership with us that goes back, well, since the beginning of their ministry, but they were members of Trinity back in the 80s, when they were living here in Lafayette, then moved on. John, I guess, retired, quit, abandoned his job in the oil business to do ministry, and they started out taking a lot of our youth teams to different places. Since then, they have narrowed the focus to where they now run a ministry, Hope for Burundi, that targets just Burundi. Both Burundi and Liberia are two of the poorest countries, not only in Africa but in the world, and it's a devastating, terrible situation there that takes a lot. John and Diane's partner, and our partner, is named Peace. She's from there. Burundi went through a genocide. You've heard of Rwanda and the genocide that happened there. Burundi was a part of that whole event. It was devastating, and the effects of that are still apparent everywhere. But John, Peace, and you and Diane and Peace have set up this home care program, which brings women in and provides hope for them in real practical ways. Tell us a little bit about who this woman is that'll come into the program, what it does for her.
Okay. Sure. Well, it's good to be back. Like Tim said, I think it was 30-some-odd years ago we moved to Lafayette, not by choice, but just with the job. And so we got to meet with a few people that are still probably here that met over at the grade school and all that. But then that's kind of, we'd just come back from Singapore and Asia, and we got to see what the world was really like, not just all of us here in America. And so our hearts really started turning toward missions, but we thought we were the most unqualified people in the world to do missions, and probably 99% of y'all think the same way, but that's not necessarily true, because God uses all of us in different ways. So we got real involved with a lot of different things, and we met Peace. We'll just call her Peace. Her last name's Nehomberry, but Peace is good enough, and anybody in the country of Burundi knows who Peace is. She's pretty well known, although she would like to not be so well known for various reasons due to genocide and stuff. Most of her family was all killed during the genocide. If you know about Rwanda, the exact same thing that was happening in Burundi at exactly the same time, because they were neighboring countries, and they used to be the same country under the Belgians. So that's a whole nother issue. But everybody's been affected by that, and everybody's life has been affected by that. And so most women are treated pretty badly, or as bad as you can think. Unfortunately, and they've learned to just accept that, which is not acceptable. So Peace started this ministry of trying to help these ladies. She wanted to help them, but she said, I don't know what to do. She had been a refugee in Canada for about 10 or 15 years with her family. God called her back to go into Burundi, which everybody thought she was crazy for doing that because she had a price on her head. But she came back, and she started with a few women. I think there were three or four of them. And she asked them what they wanted to do. And they said, well, we want to learn how to sew. And Peace said, I don't know anything about sewing. So, but she did find some people who knew some things, and they got together and started putting together a program for widows and orphans. Now, to be in the program is pretty specific. That means you cannot be married, because if you're married, your husband should be taking care of you. So married people are out in this program. So you're definitely either a widow or you're an orphan, and most of that's due to the genocide that took place. So she started out with about, I think there were six ladies, and some of y'all were there, Stacy and Trish, and I can't remember who else was in the early group, who got to meet some of those early, early ladies. Now, excuse me, now there's, over the past few years, we have the classes run about 30-some-odd ladies in a class, because we just don't have a whole lot of space in the facility we're in. And we have two centers now. I'll talk about the other one in a minute. But we have now graduated 793 ladies who are full-time in business, providing for themselves, taking care of their families. Their kids are all in school. They're feeding their families every day. They have businesses that are going. They're all doing sewing because there are no stores. You know, there's no Macy's or whatever your store is here in Lafayette to go to buy new clothes. So every time you rip your shirt, I've got to have somebody to take care of that, or it stays ripped, and so that's how they make their living. So they're able to provide for their families in doing that, and providing well, even though it's less than a dollar a day. So 793 people. So let's think about that. How many in here? 250 seats? I tried counting a while ago, roughly.
I think it's
so you could take that about 300. Three times.
300?
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's about how many people have graduated that are in full-time business now. They know how to do simple math, because people know that women don't go to school, so we can always cheat them when we give them money. And our ladies go, no. You owe me some more money. Which they don't make the men aren't very happy about that, but tough. anyway, so they're doing that, and all of them, every one of their children are in school now. During the time in the beginning, we helped pay for all their kids to go to school, which doesn't cost very much, a few dollars a day. But at least they're in school, they're being fed, et cetera. Now the moms are taking care of all these. Most of these ladies have never gotten remarried because of the abuse that they went through, although we have had several. We've been to three weddings this year alone. Some of y'all might have remembered Goretti and her story. She was the first student. She'd been raped and all kinds of stuff. I won't go into details, but had a baby. Amadine, who is now 15 years old and a beautiful young lady and going to a private school up in the country. So things happen and their lives change, and it's really amazing to see how God is working in their lives. What we do is we just come alongside and help Peace and her staff do what God's put on their hearts. So we'll say, so what do you want to do this year? And she'll say, well, God's led us to do this. Well, last year they opened up our second center, which we never envisioned having a second center, up in the mountains where Peace lived and where her dad was a pastor with the Anglican Church years ago. And so we're actually at the same site. Trish, you guys might remember where that was, with the old Anglican church. They are renting a building to us very cheaply because they know the impact that the Peace and them are having with these ladies. And we had our first graduating class about 3 weeks ago that we got to go and attend. So that is really neat to see. Now they're in this mountainous area, and they're reaching out to people in this area, et cetera. We also do water filters. Some of y'all, we actually have some contributors here on a monthly basis that sends us a check every month for water filters. And water filters, the idea is just to give people clean water. We're not into drilling wells because it's too rocky and mountainous and all that kind of stuff. So we've partnered with a company called Sawyer Filters, and they give us a great deal on their filters, and all you need is a bucket and the little filter, and you can take the dirtiest water, I've drank some of the dirtiest water in the world. Anyway, when it comes out, it's cleaner than what that water in that bottle is. It takes about a minute and a half to do it. And we don't know how many lives have been saved from little kids up to adults because of drinking clean water now. We don't think about it. You think about the water you drink? Maybe in some parts of Louisiana, but I mean, in Texas, there's we have water that smells and stuff too. I mean, we never think about it. But I can't remember the little couple. I was here a couple of years ago with Peace, and we went back in the back there, and we were sharing with the group about, you know, the water filters. And I have to think something. I'm not sure if there's little kids in here now, but there was a little girl in there. She's probably 8 or 9, and I said, can you imagine your child going to school every day with diarrhea, every single day of their life? And this little girl just said, no, no, no. And so she knew what it meant to do that. And that was just here in America. Can you imagine every single day? And I know Eric and other people can agree that's not a great thing to do. It's hard to study when you can't function properly. So with the water filters, we've been able to go into Muslim communities and share the gospel, and then share them with the water, and then share with the real true water, you know, about the gospel. So you can use all kinds of little tools that don't cost millions of dollars to do, to reach people, you know, in different ways. And all of these ladies have come up with all these ideas of how to do this. And it started out with just one person. Mm-hmm. And that one person could be somebody like in here, mm-hmm, on something. You don't have to come up with millions of dollars to do things. You just have to be willing to share what God's doing in your life. And then this is what they do. Every single day, these ladies are sharing the gospel with their community. They're all walking, you know, 8 to 10 miles a day. They talk to the people they're walking with, sharing. They're getting people to come to the program. We have such a backlog of people wanting to get in now because they see what's going on and they want to be a part of that. They want to know who God really is, not the Catholic Church or whatever is teaching and everything. This last time, just real quick and winding up, we passed out over 800 Bibles to high school kids who had never had a Bible before. Mm-hmm. 500 of those kids came to the Lord. The stuff just keeps going on and on and on. It's not multi-million-dollar stuff. It's all about relationships.
Yeah.
And that's what all of this is about, is the relationships with all these guys and gals that do this stuff on a regular basis. That's what it is. And God will bring you to the people he wants you to be with, and he'll help you along the way. And whatever that might be. So I would just encourage you to think about going on trips. I know those are tough times to do, but I can promise you that there's been lives changed, including our own, once we went on a trip and saw what God was doing. He's doing stuff here in Lafayette, don't get me wrong. But it's something else to be able to see somebody else in another country who's totally devastated, whose life gets totally turned around because somebody cared. And somebody gave him a hug, and he did it for real. You didn't do it just because I was there. Mm-hmm. And you don't forget about him when you go back. So just continue praying for Burundi. It's 2020 is an election year, which is never good. And we have a president who's not going to run, but he is running. And, you know, he's a jerk. What can I say? But anyway, it's just bad. It's the poorest country in the world. A lot worse than Haiti and all the others, and if you can imagine. And it's hardly any they can't get food in from the Congo or other countries because they charge too much. So when they can bring the food into the country, they can't sell it because nobody can buy it. It's too expensive. there's no gasoline, so trucks can't go up and get things at other countries. And it, just on and on and on and on of different things. And but the people's hearts are just incredible. So I would encourage you to think about coming with us. We'll think about having some trips this coming year, maybe. We'll see how the elections go first, mm-hmm. and then we'll go from there. So thanks for your support over all these years for a couple of crazy Texans that came to invade Lafayette. So thank you.
Thank you, John. Pass that on to, you're going to go last?
No, he has the mic.
I have a mic.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah. You don't need two?
Huh?
You don't need two of those?
No, I don't need two of
them. I was going to tell John, when it comes to water here in Cajun country, we would just deep fry it like everything else.
Yeah. Throw some Tabasco on it.
Dan Shoemaker again, our oldest partner, and I don't really mean that by years, but it could, it could be getting close. Anyway, Dan has been for decades now working with RMI in Haiti, and Haiti is a place that just needs continual help. It's a rotating cycle of earthquakes, hurricanes, floods, devastation of all different types. And they have continued to minister in there, both spiritually and physically. But sometimes it's like digging a hole in sand. You keep digging and it keeps filling in, and it just takes persistence. So Dan, how do you do this in a country like Haiti? And what have you found that really is working and making a difference?
Well, when you look at Haiti, we realize that you can't help everybody. You can't help the whole country. But you can make a tremendous difference in a church and through that church into their community. And so God's enabled us to set up sister church partnerships like you guys here at Trinity and Pico there in Haiti and enable, first of all, relationship to happen. You know, God's called us to relationship. He wants us to be engaged with each other. And so the sister church partnership has enabled us to, first of all, develop relationship between U.S. and Haitians and enable them to experience the oneness of the Spirit, the oneness that God brings, the broken down barriers that God brings together as we come as brothers and sisters in Christ. And so the partnerships that God has brought to us have been the impetus for enabling us to really persevere and look to the future and provide hope for so many that are in hopeless situations. In Haiti, we now have 35 ongoing partnerships, many of them 10, 15, 20 years. You guys have been just next year, I think it'll be 30 years of partnering together with your sister church there in Haiti and seeing them grow on so many different levels. Not only do we want to see relationship happen, but then we want to come alongside the Haitians. You know, as in many countries, it's the nationals that are planting the church. They don't need us to help plant the church and share the gospel. But they do need us to come alongside of them and help resource that ministry so that it's much more effective, much more engaging in the local community there. And that's what our sister churches do and what we encourage them in is to come alongside, help provide the facilities that will draw the community in into the church and into and be able to be functioning together as a body, providing some of the utensils that they need to preach the gospel in a more effective way, providing a generator for lights and a sound system and some instruments, a couple electric guitars and a bass guitar, maybe a drum set, will do more for the gospel and preaching the gospel in that area than just about anything else you can do because they love music. They love loud music. You know, those of you who've been to Haiti and sat next to the speaker know what I mean. That draws Haitians in. It draws the young people in. Those are simple things, but there's so many more things that the churches do to help resource church growth. A discipleship programs for the young people, the youth, the men and the women there. We encourage not only those ministry, but then reaching into the community in many different ways. because not only do we want to impact the church, but we together with the church, we want to engage in the community, helping them, first of all, on some of their physical needs, and then also with their spiritual needs. But sometimes you gotta feed them before you can feed them, if you know what I mean. And God's enabled us to do that through our partners. We minister into their educational lives through Hope for Kids program. You guys have been a big part of that here, and so many kids that you have sponsored. What a way to provide hope for kids, their families, and their church, their community, by helping to provide those kids with an education. 50% of the kids, just under 50% of the kids, they say, in Haiti cannot go to school because of the cost. It costs money to go to even a public school, and so they can't afford it. So your participation in the sponsorship program is key in enabling so many kids to go and get an education that they couldn't before. So right now we have 2,700 kids that have sponsored in 35 major schools, and then another 50 schools on top of that. We're impacting about 18,000 kids a year in a deworming program. We are able now to feed over 10,000 kids a day with a very nutritious, scientifically designed meal that brings most of these kids that are malnourished into good health and being able to learn and to, you know, when you go to school on a empty stomach, it's very hard to learn. When you have an opportunity to go nourished and full, and you're able then to not be sick all the time, it makes a big difference. We're also involved with water filters and providing families with water filtration. It's such a great need in Haiti, just like in Burundi. So we do a lot of that. In fact, we use some of the Sawyer filters as well, and also biosand filters. That has made a big difference in the health of people in the communities. And we do this with the church, distributing these things and sharing the gospel at the same time. We've been able to provide tens of thousands of boxes of food relief through sponsorships that you guys and all of our churches have been a part of in the last 4 or 5 years. We've been able, in the last 3 years, provide approximately 3,000 goats to young people to help them start up a little herd of their own, to give them a little business, and to enable them to establish themselves. And just many different things like that. We're starting in the area now to emphasize the area of business development, small micro businesses to enable families to sustain themselves and help themselves grow. And you'll be hearing more as a church about those kinds of opportunities in the near future. So God's using RMI. We started out with one church in 1980, and now we have 35 ongoing partnerships. And God's just seeing tremendous engagement with the Haitian people, growing them spiritually, and then growing them physically and socially and educationally as well. And we just appreciate all that you guys as a church have had and the impact that you have had there in the Pico area. All five of your schools in the district, in your district there, are getting a hot meal. So many of them have kids that are sponsored from you guys have received help for the church and the school. You guys are making a great difference in your area and impacting the area that you can be a part of. It's been great. And we have, not only that, we appreciate the impact that you have had on RMI. There's been a number of times when we have had some real needs and you've stepped in and really partnered with us in that. What an encouragement that has been, and a help in continuing the ministry. You know, it's exciting for me personally to be with these guys, to see the way that you as a church have grown in the ministry that God has enabled you to be a part of. I remember meeting in the school, I'm just surprised I'm sitting here, because the very first team you sent, they got stuck in a coup, and they had to stay, I think, a whole another week, practically. It was really tough. We had to stay at the retreat center next in front of the ocean, and it was a hard job, but we all did it, you know. God was gracious and finally got you guys home, and for you to continue on, that was God's grace. But it's been great, and we appreciate the relationship that we have had with you. That's what it's all about, the oneness we have in Christ, sharing together. And that's what makes this possible, all of us here sitting here, is that oneness that God has brought us together. So thank you for your relationship and partnership over the years.
We've had the same sister church or sister church district for the past 30 years, 29 years. And having been there the second year and gone back much more recently, it really is amazing. You know, you hear about all these programs and here's what we do and here's this and that. But when you see the difference, not just in buildings and structures and so forth, but the people are different. The kids are different. The teachers are different. The leaders of the churches are different. They've been able to sort of blossom under this help that you have brought. And there's no way you could see that without being there long enough to appreciate it.
Yeah. I just wanted that last thing, and is that one of the things that Tim has been an encouragement in over the years, and something that we have worked on as an agency, is that all of these groups here are working with indigenous folks. They are indigenous or they're nationals. And that is one thing in Haiti we have really worked hard on. Yes, I'm a white Haitian, but I'm still white. We have raised up Haitians to lead the ministry. Our ministry in Haiti is now led totally by Haitians. And my field director over the whole ministry, all the missionaries, everybody, is a Haitian. My director of operations is a Haitian. If you go down on a team these days, you are led by Haitians with our RMI team facilitators. Your partnership, any information I get on your partnership and all that's going on is focused through our Haitian partnership facilitators. So God's raising up a great army of nationals to lead RMI into the future there in Haiti. And we are very excited that you guys have been a part of encouraging that and helping us in those in many ways. A lot of behind-scenes things that you as a church don't even know. Tim's been, the church leaders have been a part of. And we appreciate that. And it's exciting to see God continuing to move forward in this ministry through our nationals. And you guys have been a part of it. So thank you for that. And it's great to be able to sit here with these guys. These guys are my heroes. So,
thank you, Dan. Well, last but not least, Eric, this is going to be a real challenge for you because it is 12 o'clock, but we've got to hear from you. So bring this home. Eric is the founder and director of Change Agent Network. When we first met Eric, there was just a tiny spark of what God might be doing. Not a lot of information about it, but there was something in Eric that was alive, and it's something that we recognized from the beginning. And so we have been amazed and enjoyed the relationship, the friendship, as you've seen God do some things in Burundi. So you can't take all the, in Liberia, you can't take all the time that you would like right now, but give us a little insight into where you are now.
Well, good morning. Well, I didn't sign up for this. I think Jesus signed up for it, and I just trying to be obedient to walk in the path that he set before me. I never signed up to come to the States, never chose it, never decided it. But just a little background of my story, I'm from Liberia, and that's where I was born. My parents were never Christian. I wasn't born in a Christian home. We slept on dirt floors and lived in a village. There was no education. We worked on a farm. And until the Civil War started in Liberia, 1989, and I guess I was around the age. I don't know my personal date of birth because there's no birth certificate over there. So by 1989, the Civil War guy started in Liberia. I was captured, tortured, beaten, left to die, and then left Liberia with broken arms at the age of 12, became a refugee, and for the next 12 years, I was going away from Liberia. Well, I didn't know I was going to meet Jesus in one of these refugee camps, so in Guinea Republic, 1992. I'm lying there in the camp on the dirt floor around December, around the 23, and we used to have people we called the radicals for Jesus, Jesus people who went around spreading the Jesus virus, you know, they go around in the camp. So they used to come to the camp to preach to the refugees, but the United Nations said no Christianity, no religion allowed in the camp, and we didn't even want to hear about Jesus because, I mean, we lost our country, lost family, lost everything. We don't want to hear about him. But 1992, I'm lying down on the floor, and these people had a very good strategy. They would come in around 4 a.m. in the morning with a bullhorn and a megaphone, and they walk around, over 30,000 refugees, and they would preach the word. And there was no congregation, there was no gathering, no coffee, no nothing. You know, so, and they would just preach around. So I remember lying on my dirt floor 4 a.m. in the morning, and he started to preach, and I'm listening, I'm not asleep, because around that time, most of our refugees were not out there looking for food. So he started to preach, and he said, you know, God is so good that he saved your life and he brought you out here. And he said, if you don't believe that, can you explain how you survived this war in your country? And I couldn't answer the question. And he said, everything your parents ever taught you, how is it working out for you? I couldn't answer that. He said, everything you ever trusted, the U.S. government, the United Nations, the Liberian government, I couldn't answer. And then he said, when are you going to go back home? If you know where you headed, when are you going to return to Liberia? And I couldn't answer. He said, you know what? God has a wonderful plan for you. He saved your life. And one day, some of you are going to return like the prophet Nehemiah to help rebuild your nation. And he said, if you want to give Jesus a chance to work on you, close your eyes wherever you are, and I will pray the sinner's prayer for you. And for the first time in my life, I closed my eyes in my tent on the dirt floor, no light, no nothing. And then he prayed the sinner's prayer, and he said, I don't have a Bible to give you. I don't have a church to recommend. I have no money. I have no food to give you. But Jesus has a way to take care of you. Fast forward the story. In 2004, I'm in a refugee camp. The U.S. government showed up there, and they're like, well, we are here to help some of you refugees return to Liberia, and some of you are going to go to America. So they wrote our stories down. My story was chosen to be brought to America. I never chose it. They planned it. So they're like, well, you're going to go to L.A., and I'm thinking Los Angeles. I never thought of Louisiana. So I arrived in Liberia 2006, August. But the moment I got out of the plane, there was this huge culture shock. Couldn't process anything. I remember getting to UPA apartment around 9 p.m. and at University Place apartment, and I walk into the apartment. They show me this bed, a queen bed was there, and the lady said, this is your bed. I never slept on a bed like that before. None of my family, none of my whole generation slept on a bed like that. But what got my attention was they had over 10 pillows on one bed. And I'm thinking, what am I going to do with 10 pillows on one bed? And she brought me outside and showed me the microwave, and microwave, never seen it before. She said, this is what Americans use to cook. And I said, there's no fire in it, no smoke, no wood. How do you cook in the box? But what got me that night was she opened this fridge, double door fridge. It was filled with food. By the way, when I was in the refugee camp, we had 6 kilograms of rice for the whole month and 2 liters of oil. That was it. So in less than 24 hours, like the world flipped over. And she opened this fridge. It was filled with food, so much food in it. And she said, this is your food to eat. You look too skinny. And on Saturday, I'm going to come and replenish. So right there, the Lord spoke to my heart. I said, well, Eric, if she's going to come replenish, you may as well clean out the whole fridge and ship it to Liberia, and she's going to bring more. That's where the idea came from. And lastly, for the night, the biggest culture shock was she said to me, I need to show you the temperature control. That blew me away. I said, hey, please go home. I'll see you tomorrow. And she left. I slept on the dirt, on the floor in the living room, and I prayed to the Lord, and I said, Lord, I don't know what am I doing here. Out of everybody in Africa, out of everybody in Liberia, you chose to bring me here. For the first time, I'm not sitting around the fire. We're not telling stories. I'm here by myself. The AC is on. This is crazy. What's the purpose? And I remember the Lord telling me, you are to return. You are to return. Fast forward the story, I started to share my story with people. I wanted to go dumpster diving, so I started gathering old computers and textbooks and clothing from my neighbors and my friends. And that was because there's so much leftovers in America. So I said, I just want the leftovers. I don't want the most important thing, just the leftovers. So I started to gather that. I didn't know how, this was just an inspired story. I mean, I didn't know how it was going to play out. So I started to talk to people. I remember going to the Catholic Church. I'm like, hey, I came from Africa. I want to do this. And they're like, well, even though we brought you here, you are not a priest. You're not ordained to do this. And we have the Catholic order that does this. I was like, there's no Catholic Church in my village. How are you going to do this? And I remember going to the Baptist. You know, are you Southern Baptist, Southern Freedom? You know, independent Baptist. I'm like, I don't know the difference. So, well, when they help Southern Baptist members. So it was just like that from one place to the other until I met with Lou one day at Matt's office. And Lou pulled me in and she said, like, I want to invite you to our church. Our church is all about mission. I'm like, well, I'm expecting these people to say no. So I walk in here, not expecting anything. I just came to eat. You guys were having baptism go on that day. And I sat down with Marty next to her, and we ate. And after that, I said, well, I only need $400. That's what I needed, $400 for the month to take care of mission in Africa. So I ran to Tim, ran in the corridor, and like, hey, long story short, I need $400 for mission. Up to today, Tim have not given me that $400. All right? So we shipped the containers. The good news is that since then, we have shipped 14 containers. Some of you have been involved with that. Not just that, the first Americans to follow me back to Liberia were Marty, Sister Marty, and Heather from this church. And I didn't believe when they said they were coming because there was nothing there. We didn't have no guest houses. There was no school. It was just an idea to start. And when they came back, they took over this, and all of you in this church got involved with it. Since then, we have built 14 schools across Liberia. And there are over 3,000 children in school. We have 200 employees on payroll nationwide. Other states have gotten involved, like Texas, Florida, Michigan, Indiana, that have built schools in other parts of the country. The vision is to transform the entire nation of Liberia through quality Christian education, mentorship, sustainable development, and the hope of the gospel. The hope of the gospel is all that we got to give the world, nothing else. When I came to America, I didn't know what depression was until I got here. And that's what the Lord revealed to me. When I came here, I was expecting everybody to be happy. Great work going on. But I was shocked when I was invited to share my story with people who were depressed. I'm like, if anybody has a reason to be depressed, I am, but I'm not. So why are you depressed? But what the Lord revealed to me is that the poor you are always going to have. The materially poor and spiritually poor will always exist. So coming to America is not the end of the problem. It's just the beginning of another journey. So what I'm doing is to be a bridge between our minds and our heart, connecting the bridge. And Trinity have done a great job with that, and you people have been awesome. I can't just explain this without Trinity. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Eric. Thank you all.
All right, lastly, my parents were not Christians, like I told you. So I started this whole journey not knowing how my parents were going to know the Lord. And Marty came to Liberia the second year she came to Liberia with me and some mission members. I didn't want Marty to meet my parents because I know them. You know, they thought I had a demonic power that produces money for me to build all these schools I was building. You know, so they didn't want to have anything to do with me. I didn't want to have anything to do with it. For 3 years, it was like that. So when Marty came one night, we had a hotel, and she's like, Eric, tomorrow we are not going to the school. We want to go see your parents, your mom. I'm like, no, that's a bad idea. You don't want to see her. And she said, no, we are going to see her. So we went to see my mom, and I scared them. I tried to talk them out of it. They said, no. I said, well, there are snakes on the road. We have crabs in the water. You got to go. She said, well, Eric, we came with some tennis shoes. We are prepared to go. So we got on the way because they were three against one, you know, Marty and Heather and Martin, three against I alone. So I said, okay, let's go. So as we were going, my mom at the time lived in the slum. You got to walk through the water. You got to remove your shoes. There's no paved road, no nothing going to her house. So as we were walking to my mom's house, the entire community came out just trying to find out where these white people from Lafayette are going. So they were standing there, and she came to me. She's like, what are you doing? Who are these people? I said, well, they're my friends. Let's just go home. So we got to the house, and Marty is like, hey, mom, can we talk to you in your room? So they took my mom in the room. I don't know what they discussed there. But they give her a lady dress, some jewelry, you know, how ladies always buy stuff for ladies. So they give it to her, and they give her $300 or so. $300, well, we converted that money. It was around 60,000 Liberian dollars. So my mom became a millionaire overnight, you know. So Marty said, well, can we pray for you? And she said, oh, yeah, pray for me. You know, this is a great partnership. So Marty got to pray for my mom, and after praying for her, and then we left. That night, my mom sent for me for the first time in about 4 years. She said, you can't sleep out tonight. You need to come home. So I went home, and she's like, look at what happened today. These people, I don't know them. I never imagined I would ever meet anyone from the other side of the world, come to my house, drink my water, sit here in my room. So what did you say to these people that brought them here? And I said, Jesus. He said, Jesus? I say, that's the man who took care of me when I left you guys at the age of 12. And he said, so what are they here to do? I said, well, they came to help us, to help more people, to talk about Jesus. And she said, you know, Eric, I've been wasting my time all my life. I want to know that Jesus tonight. And I sent for the pastor. I prayed for my mom. Today my mom is the mother of a church, the mother of the year in the church that she goes to. And my sister followed, brother followed, and the whole family got saved. So it's not just the schools. It goes down to the salvation of my entire family because you guys got involved. Thank you.
Amen. Well, it's just, it's beyond belief that all five of these guys are here right now. And we've gone a little bit over, but they've come a long way, and so I appreciate your patience. I do have to clear one thing up. Eric, when you asked for that $400, I told you, after you tell me your story, I'll give you the $400. When you finish telling me your story, then you get it. And I think it's going to be a while. So there you go. Thank you so much for being the church that loves these folks and loves their people, loves the things that they love. God has blessed us by just walking these folks into our lives. It has not been hard. We didn't do research or have matrices and grids to figure out who to partner with. God chose that, and He just gifted us with them. And so go on a mission trip. Come get to know them. This is a precious moment that all five can be here. I'm going to wrap it up. We're not going to have an ending song. We did plan not to have an ending song because we knew that we would need all of this time. But we will have prayer folks up front. So if you would like prayer for anything, just come and get that and let me pray as we close.